California is burning. Okay, not all of it, all the time, but the last few years, all over the West Coast, California wildfires have been setting records. Not just in the number of them, but in the size and destructiveness of these fires. Wildfires are burning in the forested lands all over California, and they are increasingly happening where we live, where we build our homes and communities. And with that, these fires are destroying thousands of homes and other buildings, raging through sometimes hundreds of thousands of acres, spewing harmful smoke into the air and destroying lives. And more often in these wildfires, people are dying.
The Camp Fire has now claimed the lives of at least 42 people, and nearly 230 people are still missing.
My name is Matt Fidler. I was born and raised in California, but my wife and I spent the years 2013 through 2017 living on the East Coast. When we decided it was time to come back to California, we bought a beat-up RV and traveled across the country to enjoy the sights. When we finally approached the Sierra Nevada Mountains, crossing the Nevada desert on Highway 80, we looked to the distance, waiting to see the first glimpse of the mountains that we loved so much. But as we entered Reno, we didn't get the majestic view that we hoped for, because the Reno Basin was filled with smoke. And as we went up and down the state, visiting family and friends from Ventura, Santa Barbara, Santa Rosa, and Redding, we only experienced more smoke and more stories of fire.
Take a look at this map. We now have 61 uncontained large fires in 15 western states. It's an emergency.
We eventually settled down in my old college town of Chico, California, on the northeast part of California's Central Valley. And within a year, just 15 miles away, erupted the most deadly fire in California's history, the Camp Fire, which destroyed the town of Paradise and ravaged many of the communities in the surrounding foothills.
On November 8th, at about 6:30 a.m., the fire is first reported.
It felt like apocalypse, like something really, really horrible was happening.
Nathan was sending me pictures at like 8:30, I think, in the morning of this plume of smoke.
The massive fire has burned through 117,000 acres.
This community completely destroyed. More than 100 people are still missing. 10,000 plus buildings just reduced to rubble, like this one, just absolutely gutted. And many of those buildings were people's homes.
This is why I partnered with North State Public Radio and Sierra Nevada Brewing Company to do a deep exploration of California wildfires, why they are so much bigger and more severe than before, what we can do about it, and how to live smarter and safer in a place that regularly burns. Join us on this journey because, despite the name of the series, this is more than just a California problem. You're listening to California Burning. As a resident of Chico, my life has been heavily impacted by the Camp Fire. I started working on this project in the summer of 2018, but it turned personal on November 8th. This problem needs solutions, and everyone with a stake in this game is invited to participate, because this problem affects us all, not just Californians, but all of us humans who like to eat good food, drink clean water, and breathe clean air. We're going to be learning a lot about forest ecology and how fire works as we go, but briefly, and this is an accepted fact by everyone from environmentalists to outdoorsmen and hunters to ranchers and timber harvesters. Most West Coast forests are overgrown. There are too many small trees growing right next to each other in overly dense tree stands. The forests in California pre-European settlement had trees much further spaced apart that grew much bigger. Think of the Yosemite Valley or Avenue of the Giants, which have these great old trees that you can easily walk under the canopy of. Well, in most forested land now, except for well-managed areas of some national parks, you couldn't even crawl through the canopy. It's dense with small trees, brush, and what we call forest fuel. Leaves, broken branches, dying and dead trees, dense chaparral. These conditions, among other negative effects, spread fire fast and burn extremely hot. So, what is forest management, you may ask? Well, Anything to do with the forest that alters it is a management decision, from building a road to cutting a tree, but also planting new trees, changing the trees that live there, dredging or damming rivers, or doing a controlled or low-intensity prescribed burn like what the Native Americans did. This is all forest management. Like I just said, the forests in California were kept open and healthy by the native Californians for thousands of years by occasionally starting low-level fires on the land. More on that in the next episode. Then the Spanish explorers and European settlers moved in, and they outlawed this use of fire. They wanted to save trees for timber, and they went to great lengths to put out other wildfires that started from natural or other reasons. Later, in the 1960s and 70s, ecologists and forest managers began to understand the nature of these fire-prone forests, that these forests needed occasional fires to remain healthy and resilient to catastrophic wildfires. But the idea of starting a fire in the forest, or even just letting one burn, is the exact opposite of what most of us have been taught.
It was only you can prevent forest fires.
It was this big, nice, fuzzy bear kind of thing. You know, it's like a Disney character that you would grow to love.
Smokey the Bear says, only you can prevent forest fires, right? That's what he says.
They taught us about Smokey the Bear in school. I'm thinking kindergarten, first grade, second grade.
The commercial that was on TV, there was always something where you would take water and pour it over the ashes of your campfire and then stir it to make sure that the fire was out. And that was, he did like a little demonstration.
Smokey the Bear, Smokey the Bear, prowling and a growling and a sniffing the air. He can spot a fire before it starts to flame.
That's why they call him Smokey, that was how he got his name.
Yes, Smokey Bear. Only you can prevent forest fires was the first lesson I ever learned about forest fires and forests in general. It was a strong message that taught me that fire was the worst enemy of the forest. And very likely you had this same message pounded into you if you've ever visited a national forest or park. Because Smokey Bear is huge and has been around for decades, arguably the most effective advertising campaign ever.
I'm going to go on record as saying Smokey more popular than the Beatles.
This is Dr. James Lewis of the Forest History Society. He's published numerous books on the national forest system and is the editor of Forest History Today. And recently, he published an article about the rich history of the most effective advertising campaign of all time. And while it may not be the first thing that pops into your mind when you think of a favorite ad gimmick, I can't think of one slogan as memorable and effective as only you can prevent forest fires. So, how did Smokey get to be so popular? To answer that question, we got to go back to the end of the Great Depression in the late 1930s, when people, because of the Depression, were rightfully traumatized with economic insecurity.
A lot of people, both in and out of government, saw advertising as wasteful. People were in dire straits. How could you be promoting these consumer items that really are quite frivolous?
Which is why advertising wasn't very well regarded. But after the Pearl Harbor attack got us into World War II, the advertising industry saw that they could fulfill a need. As a way to get back into the public's good graces, they created, for free, an advertising campaign promoting conservation for the war effort.
All metal scrap in the basement and attic has gone to war. All old newspapers, magazines, and paper cartons are bundled up and tied for the local salvage drive.
Then, on February 23rd, just a couple of months after the Pearl Harbor attacks, a Japanese sub surfaces just north of Santa Barbara, California.
And they surfaced long enough to fire about 24 small artillery shells at an oil refinery. It didn't really do much damage physically, only about $500 worth of damage. But what it did do was strike a huge emotional blow for Americans, and particularly Californians, because now suddenly the war is literally at their shore.
And in California at this time, one of the resources the government is most concerned with protecting is timber, and they see it as being vulnerable. Santa Barbara has forests surrounding it that tend to burn, what if they were lit on purpose? So advertisers volunteer their time to come up with a campaign promoting forest fire awareness and relating it to the war.
When you look at those first few posters, what you see is a caricature of a Japanese soldier holding up a book of matches, and it's less about the fire and more, you can interpret it as it's more of a fear of the Japanese. And it's for a couple of reasons. One is the submarine incident, but there's also a very large Japanese-American population in California. And I'll remind listeners of the Japanese internment camps that had already been coming into existence very rapidly.
And while these posters were plastered all over the West Coast for a couple of years, they had similar ones with caricatures of Germans setting fires on the East Coast. But it turns out that children get scared when they're shown menacing characters that are trying to burn down their country.
Schools rejected them. So they wanted to put them up in schools, and the feedback came of, these are scaring the kids.
So the ad agencies get together to make a more kid-friendly campaign. Perhaps some sort of friendly forest creature. Then, by pure coincidence, the Disney animated classic Bambi comes out in theaters.
Get up!
There is that amazing climatic scene in the film where some hunters accidentally start a forest fire. They leave a campfire unattended, and the next thing you know, Bambi and his family and friends are fleeing for their lives from a forest fire.
No. Come with me.
And so they went to Disney, to Walt Disney, and asked him about using Bambi.
Walt Disney agrees to let Bambi be the spokesperson for the National Forest, and children love it. Perhaps even giving the movie a boost, which was not an overnight success. But the contract with Disney is only for 1 year.
And towards the end of that, the Ad Council and the Forest Service began discussions to figure out what they were going to do next. We know we want to use an animal. What animal do we want to use?
And they go through a bunch of animals, but pretty quickly settle on a bear. I mean, it's the most powerful, cool, human-like animal we have in our forests. The first artist to design Smokey is Albert Stahl, who draws a bear looking like the grizzly on the California flag almost. So a little more realistic. But that was short-lived, so hoping to get a message out to children, they hire an artist named Rudolph Wendelin to draw the more cartoony character that starts to attract the attention of children. Then, years later, in the 1950s, firefighters in New Mexico save a bear cub stuck up a tree trying to escape a wildfire. They rescue this bear, and when word gets to Forest Service headquarters in Washington, D.C., they decide to name him Smokey and keep him at the zoo as a real-life incarnation of Smokey Bear.
He gets to his new home at the National Zoo, and folks start sending letters, especially children. They start sending letters and jars of honey and, you know, get-well gifts and things. And the volume of mail is so great that they eventually gave Smokey Bear his own zip code.
Smokey Bear brought more attention to the Forest Service than ever. From Smokey came the Junior Forest Ranger program that kids could sign up for, and kids would get a Junior Forest Ranger kit with a badge and Smokey's face on it. And those kids eventually grew up, and some became Forest Rangers.
There's a generation or two of Forest Service employees who, if you ask them why they joined the Forest Service or when did they get interested in the outdoors, they will point to Smokey Bear in that campaign in the 50s and 60s.
Perhaps Smokey's message was too successful. The lesson that I took away from Smokey Bear when I was a kid was that forest fires were bad, period. But Smokey Bear certainly wasn't the first to imply fire was the enemy of the forest. The first call to suppress all forest fires came from a man named Gifford Pinchot, the first chief of the United States Forest Service. We're going to take a short break and come back to learn about Pinchot and how he got things so hopelessly wrong despite his undying love of nature.
in the midst of the Civil War, he's writing about a future that has yet to come and saying, you know, the Civil War thing, as bloody as it is, it's actually not the real issue. The real issue is whether the United States will survive its own economic aggression on nature.
This is California Burning. We'll be right back.